Did you know that a species of lizard called the basilisk lizard, also known as the Jesus lizard, can run on water? Or that the scales of a turtle shell are called scutes? How about that the alligator is the loudest reptile with its gigantic roar? Or that some species of reptiles, such as iguanas and tuataras, have a third light-sensing organ on their head, known as a pineal eye? There is even a species of lizard, known as the horn lizard, that can shoot blood from its eye. Reptiles are one of the most diverse classes of animals and can be found on every continent except Antarctica. They are really unique, weird, and wonderful creatures. However, we are at risk of losing these amazing animals. More than 1 out of 5 species of reptiles are threatened with extinction globally. And yet, they are one of the least researched classes of animals in regards to conservation. Just this year, the first global reptile assessment was released and brought to light the troubles that these animals are facing. Welcome to the Our Inheritance podcast, where we focus on stories about conserving our planet. We explore different accounts of wildlife, nature, restoration, and rehabilitation in our changing climate. I'm Ella, and today we will be exploring the threats that reptiles face, what we are currently doing about it, and what we need to do in the future to protect reptile species for generations to come. This past April, a new study was released in the journal Nature. It assesses over 10,000 reptile species worldwide, and it was the first of its kind. Neil Cox and Bruce E. Young organized the study, and it involved many other scientists from around the world. Before the study was released, there was no other recorded global conservation assessment focused just on reptiles. Neil Cox, one of the co-authors, said, quote, "This threat analysis is the most extensive to date. We've found more reptile species are threatened than birds, a sign that global efforts to conserve them must be ramped up," end quote. While it is clear that reptiles globally aren't doing great, the reasons behind their decline are less clear. To further understand the research being done on the threats to reptiles, I wanted to talk to a local herpetologist. A herpetologist is someone who studies reptiles and amphibians. I reached out to Carol Hall from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. She works with the DNR to do biological surveys, also known as species assessments, on rare species of reptiles. Hi, Carol. Can you tell me about what you do and the projects you work on?
Okay. I work with the Minnesota DNR, Department of Natural Resources, and I'm a herpetologist in a program that's called the Minnesota Biological Survey. And I work with a team of about 30 other ecologists and animal specialists who collect data on Minnesota's native plants and animals and plant communities throughout the state. And the data we collect is used for a variety of conservation efforts, including land management, conservation planning, and as well as assessing the status of Minnesota's rare species.
Her work mostly involves gathering data targeting Minnesota's rare reptile and amphibian species. These are species that are considered endangered, threatened, or of special concern. Her surveys are used to inform many different political, conservation, and land management decisions. I asked her what they have found to be the biggest threats to Minnesota reptiles.
Yeah, loss of habitat is a big one.
Yeah.
Both terrestrial and aquatic habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the species that use multiple habitats and species that need to, you know, they got large home ranges, so they may travel long distances throughout their active season, you know, they're more at risk than some of the other species. Road mortality is, and that's partly to blame for these species having issues. Road mortality is a problem for species that travel a lot. You know,
yeah.
Amphibians and reptiles in particular aren't able to move quickly, typically. Busy roads are just a death trap for a variety of species. Disease is also another threat and becoming an increasing threat over the years. We've had some different, we haven't documented in Minnesota yet, but there are different diseases associated with turtles that are
yeah
more of a problem down south. snake fungal disease is an issue and has caused population declines in some areas. We know it occurs in Minnesota, but it doesn't seem to be too significant. Those are a couple of diseases. Collection for the pet trade is another problem, even though it is illegal. We know that it happens.
Yeah.
And in some areas where you've got, you know, significant aggregation of, you know, critters at a nesting site or, you know, during particular periods of migration, they may be really vulnerable to people collecting them.
Due to all these threats, reptiles in Minnesota face serious population decline, and some are even in danger of becoming regionally extinct. However, this isn't just a Minnesota problem. Reptiles all over the world are threatened by habitat destruction, road mortality, global warming, disease, and more. Carol and others doing similar work around the world are extremely valuable in getting accurate data on reptile conservation and informing future conservation efforts. While there are many gaps in our knowledge and much of the data is still being gathered, it is good to know that there are important and effective conservation projects in action right now. To get more information on current projects, I reached out to Tricia Markle of the Minnesota Zoo. She has worked on multiple reptile conservation projects in the past and is currently working on a project with wood turtles. Hi, Tricia. Can you tell me a little bit more about the projects you work on and what you do?
But yeah, so the current work at the zoo, all these years, has all been very turtle-focused. And we've been looking at impacts, kind of a variety of threats that impact Minnesota turtles, especially our two state threatened species, which are wood turtles and blandings. And we've had a number of projects in close collaboration, especially with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So we've been going out and tracking wood turtles in southern Minnesota. So we put little transmitters on them. We can understand, you know, their habitat movements and their range size, where they may be nesting, other threats they might be facing. And then we've had a couple of projects trying to protect nesting sites.
One past project she worked on was related to habitat destruction and road mortality. She worked with members of the Minnesota Transportation Department on a project aimed to address some of the threats found by scientists like Carol Hall.
We had a project with the Minnesota Department of Transportation where we were looking at mitigating some road mortality. So we built some fencing, some barriers with these specialized turnarounds at the end to redirect turtles back to wetlands and ideally to kind of safe passages underneath the roadways like existing culverts.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that that was really effective. We had reductions up to like 90% at some of our sites.
This project identified very promising solutions. However, cost and scale are major hurdles to these solutions. That project was encouraging as it identified concrete solutions, and so is the current project she's working on. Tricia is currently working on a head-starting program in partnership with the Minnesota DNR. The head-starting program takes wood turtle eggs from the wild and incubates them in a controlled captive environment. This allows the eggs to hatch with a much higher success rate than they would in the wild, as they don't have to deal with flooding, human disruption, pollution, and other threats. Don't worry, though, there won't be any frantic mama turtles looking for their eggs, as once the females lay their eggs, they return right back to their lives, leaving their eggs and babies to fend for themselves. Once these eggs are hatched, some of the babies are released straight back into the wild, from around the same area they were taken. This is done because they don't have the resources to rear all of them. However, some of these babies are kept and head-started. These babies are kept for a year and are raised in a wild atmosphere in captivity, where they are protected during their most vulnerable time. Once they have successfully survived their first year, they are released back into wild. There are some pretty promising results from this program. Like her previous projects, Tricia and her team are mostly limited by resources and money. This isn't unique to Tricia's team. Carol Hall has this issue as well. Reptiles are often passed up during conservation and research in favor of game animals and animals that are quote-unquote more popular. While it is understandable that reptiles aren't an animal for everyone, we must conserve them. If they are extinct, not only could we lose thousands of amazing and unique species, but we could lose whole ecosystems. Reptiles are extremely important to ecosystems, as their role can range from prey to even apex predators. If a species of reptile were to go extinct, we would risk the collapse of a whole ecosystem, creating a domino effect for extinctions. There is some good news, though. The study from Cox and Young mentioned earlier found that many of the threatened reptile species are in locations that have protection efforts in place for that habitat, as other animals from those areas are also threatened as well. This helps protect reptiles too. However, just protecting general areas based on data from other animals isn't enough. There needs to be conservation plans based on up-to-date information about reptile populations. Everything is not hopeless and out of our control. There is stuff we can do to help save these amazing animals and the ecosystems they are a part of. Both Carol and Tricia had good advice for us on this. Educating yourself and other people is a great first step. In addition, don't support any part of the pet trade that takes animals from the wild. And if you see a turtle or other reptile crossing a local road, don't take it in as a pet. Instead, you can just leave it there or help it cross the road in the direction it was already going. Another extremely important step to take is vote for legislators that will create laws to protect your local habitats and wildlife. We need to act now so that we can ensure that there will be these weird, wacky, and wonderful creatures in the future. I'd like to thank the Blake School Environmental Science Program and research support staff for helping me source, cite, and fact-check this podcast. I'd like to thank Carol Hall and Tricia Markle for taking the time to talk to me about reptile conservation and their work. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and or leave a review/rate. Please check out the other podcasts in the series. Thank you for listening!